You're listening to the IFL TV podcast in association with Lonsdale MTK Global, sponsored by William Hill.
Oscar Bevis, IFL TV, proudly sponsored by The Last here in Liverpool, joined by a very smart and dapper-looking Eddie Hearn. Are we, Ed?
Well, it's not quite Vegas, is it, Oscar, as you know? And it's a lot colder, but we're here, ready to go, mate. Feeling good. Big finish to the year. Obviously, we've been on a great run, but four shows in 2 weeks. Bivol this weekend in Russia, and obviously Conor Benn, Katie Taylor. And then next week, Uzbekistan on the Friday night with Madrimov, Soro, and the big Chisora Parker fight. So, bit of news from Boris last night, which means we're safe for the foreseeable future. Let's just get these shows done and have a great Christmas.
I'll jump straight in with Conor Benn. I was speaking to Frank last night and I said to him, we had Bellew, we had Froch, we had Kell when he was at his peak, and we had that sort of era of your British superstars outside of the heavyweights. We sort of vying for another one. Is there a lot of pressure around, not just Conor in the ring, but you guys out the ring to get this right? It's been a brilliant journey so far. He goes again Saturday night. Is this like a, there's a lot of pressure around this journey, isn't there?
Yeah, I feel that Conor Benn is, he's already a star of British boxing. You know, we're seeing it across the numbers. We're seeing it, you know, in the arenas. I mean, you know, we'll probably have close to 7,000 people there this Saturday in Liverpool. He's a kid from Essex headlining in Liverpool. It's very, very unusual. And that's when you start to see the big names. You know, Khan in his day could headline in any city and fill it up. You know, and there's very few people that can draw those kind of numbers in cities outside of their environment. I feel that Conor Benn is a star. He's potentially one of the biggest stars in world boxing. But you get to these kind of fights and then your bum just starts to go a little bit because you know this is a tough fight. And I know people say, oh, Algeria's 37 or, you know, Algeria's a great fighter. Algeria's boxed Manny Pacquiao. He had a very close fight with Amir Khan. He beat Provodnikov for the world title. Yes, he's towards the back stages of his career. He's not shot. He's not showing loads of signs of decline. He's incredibly fit. He's healthy. You know, he's smart. And this is a really dangerous fight for Conor Benn. Because sometimes when you look past these kind of guys and you start talking about Broner and Poulter and Khan and all these kind of people, you end up losing rounds. And before you know it, you've lost the fight. You get stopped late or you lose on points. And this is, I really see this as a really competitive fight against Algeria, who looks tremendous and will really realise the benefits of being up at 147 pounds over 140. Because when he makes 140, he don't look well. Look at him now. He's full of health, full of energy, and he believes that they're going to win on Saturday night. And that's why they're here.
It's funny with Conor because you get a lot of people saying that his journey is sort of being moulded to suit him and he's fighting these guys who, like you said, Algeria, near the back end of his career, has been at the top level but isn't perhaps what he was 4 or 5 years ago. But I suppose getting those fights for a fighter and suiting them is the promoter's job. So you're moulding Conor's journey, but that's your job. But you also get that sort of criticism for that as well.
It's somewhere in the middle. It's choosing the right fights commercially and it's giving him an opportunity to progress as a fighter. But let me ask you this. Sebastian Formella fought Sean Porter on a headline on PBC. He went 12 rounds and then literally a few months later, Conor Benn fought him and got criticism over the same fighter that Sean Porter just boxed, right? Samuel Vargas, he comes in, boxed Virgil Ortiz, but went the distance with Amir Khan, put Khan on his backside. Conor takes him out in a round. Then they go into the Adrian Granados fight. Very good, tough fighter who got hit and decided to run all night. Now Chris Algieri. So Formella, Vargas, Granados, Algieri. This is the perfect development of a young fighter. And when you've got someone as potentially as special as Conor Benn, you don't fuck it up by being too brave or, you know, this is the perfect fight. So can he lose on Saturday? Absolutely he can lose on Saturday. And he can lose in a couple of ways. One's by underperforming and two by just not being good enough to beat Chris Algieri. So, you know, matchmaking is an art, and it's an art because it's about development and it's about creating fights that people are interested in. And
we've seen how hard of an art it is recently, actually, haven't we? With the amount of home fighters are losing as well.
But also, when I'm finishing my sentence, don't pull the microphone away. Yeah, of course, but we're seeing that through the pandemic. But one thing of Conor Benn is he hasn't been inactive and he stayed in the gym the whole time. So there's no reason. If he gets beat on Saturday, it's not because, oh, it's the pandemic or he's been inactive. It's just that he's not good enough. And that can happen against a fighter like Chris Algieri. This is it for Algeri. He's come here to win this fight. He must win. So you're going to get a really good Chris Algeri. And, but I'll tell you something now, Conor Benn looks sensational. And in that Granados fight, you know, obviously he got COVID at fight camp. You know, he made weight nearly, put on that weight, got over COVID, came back. He didn't have the same kind of spring in his step in fight week. This week, he is buzzing. And he feels like he's going to put a tremendous performance in on Saturday.
EH, working with AB, potentially. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Obviously, Conor has got Saturday, but you can see why that's got some excitement in the UK, because Conor and Adrian Broner is, and a perfect fight to introduce him to the States as well, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a great fight. Adrian reached out to us a couple of days ago. We're going to have a chat about Saturday, mate. Various bits and pieces. And it's a great fight. Broner's a real dangerous fight because sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. You know, I've been ringside watching Adrian Broner when he boxed Gavin Reese at 135 pounds in Atlantic City. I thought this kid's one of the best fighters I've ever seen live. If you get a focused Adrian Broner, it's a really dangerous fight. If you get one that's not quite been concentrating in camp, it's a great bit of matchmaking. So it's somewhere between the two. And that is a massive British fight, Adrian Broner against Conor Benn. But he has to get through Algeri. You know, we keep talking about Taylor Serrano, all this kind of stuff. She's got to get through Sharapova. These are the kind of fights that are sometimes the hardest because they're the fight before the fight that everyone's talking about.
Katie Taylor, she has got Firouza Sharapova in a way, but I said to her yesterday, I feel a bit sorry for her because I listened to a few interviews and the name bandied about is just Serrano. But she's got someone who, I know she said a couple of things about she's been training with people Katie's fought in the amateurs, so she feels like she knows a bit about Katie, so she's here and she's game.
I'm very concerned about Sharapova because she comes with a team of about 80 people. She's got Kazakhstan back. I mean, they haven't stopped moaning since they've been in. The hotel's not good enough. Where's the gym? So, but they're taking it really seriously. And they're obviously taking it seriously because they think they can win. But she's not here in awe of Katie Taylor. She's a good amateur and she's WBA mandatory. And these are the kind of fights, as I said, that are sometimes the hardest because Katie Taylor's thinking, well, I mean, I'll win on Saturday and I'm fighting Amanda Serrano in the biggest fight of all time at Madison Square Garden. And that's what she's got to do. She's just got to get through Saturday. First time she's boxed in Liverpool. I'm really excited about that. We're going to have around 7,000, as I said, in the arena, and it's going to be a great atmosphere.
Just quickly on that, will it be a dead cert that if she wins, she will fight Serrano?
Yeah, the contract's not signed, but we have an agreement in principle between both sides to make that fight around April time, and that's what we'll be trying to do.
Ed, the WBC finally have ordered Dillian White to be Tyson Fury's mandatory. You kind of knew it was going to happen at some point anyway, but is it just like a nice little relief, a little weight off the shoulders that at least it's been ordered and now it can sort of get moving?
For sure. I mean, look, that's great news for Dillian White. There's still, of course, the situation of the split to resolve. You know, I said to Maurizio on Saturday in Vegas, it's very difficult to negotiate a fight when you don't actually know what the purse bid split is. So we'll see how that develops in the arbitration and the discussions with the WBC. You know, but you got a situation there where if you got one side thinks the split should be 55-45 and another side who thinks the split should be 80-20, you're not going to reach a deal. So that needs to be determined before we can consider deals, really, I think. Obviously, there's the purse bid scenario, but we're more than happy to do a deal if it's the right terms for Dillian White. And we will be aggressive. We'd love to promote that fight. So we'll be aggressively speaking to our partners to see what kind of bid we would make for that fight. And Dillian will weigh up his options and decide what route to go down.
Do you get a hunch that these negotiations in the 30 days will go smoothly?
Will what? Smoothly? Again, I think it's very difficult to negotiate when you don't know what the split is. So I don't see a deal being reached until everybody knows what the split of that fight is.
And in terms of what this means for Anthony Joshua, actually, just quickly one more thing. I saw potential Millennium Stadium bandied about as a venue for this one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if it's in Britain and the fight's in March, that's going to be a stadium that makes sense.
Yeah, in terms of AJ, I take it that means the step-aside money is completely off the table now and he will go ahead with the rematch as expected.
Yeah, and that doesn't change from his original plan or original preference. You know, all the step-aside stuff was discussions that were taking place without Anthony Joshua till they got to a point where they should reach Anthony Joshua. And obviously, what he always wanted to do was rematch Alexander Usyk. And with the news of Dillian White now, that's, you know, almost certain the fight that will take place probably a month or so after White against Fury.
I know you kind of wanted to keep it all quite close to your chest about what the situation was with what you would tell Anthony and what perhaps the financials were. I saw 40 million online. No?
No. I see some of this stuff sometimes and I'm just like, you know, it'd be nice, but that wasn't the number that was discussed.
Do you know where that's been pulled from? Like, at all? No.
No idea. But the mad thing is everyone runs with it and everyone believes it. Sometimes it's better just to ask me. Can't always give you the exact truth in certain situations, but at least I'll tell you what's bollocks and what's not.
The WBO, I think it was Bob last overnight, said that the WBO could potentially order the winner of Lomachenko and Comey to be mandatory for George Kambosos' WBO. We spent a whole week in Vegas talking about an undisputed fight. Could it be a kick in the bollocks for the undisputed fight, or will there sort of be a bit of agreement?
George Kambosos has just won the title. So he's entitled to a defence, and he's certainly entitled to make a fight for the undisputed championship. But what he does do is focus the mind and say, as we've seen in the heavyweight division, you don't get a lot of time to make these kind of fights. So really, we must make this fight and we must make it as soon as possible. You know, March, April, let's do a major fight in Australia. Let Kambosos have his moment of history in Australia. And also, let's solve the undisputed problem for good. And it's the only, Devin's the only fight that can tick both those boxes. So we've got to get moving, speak to Luda Bella, speak to Peter Khan, Kambosos, Ferocious Promotions, and try and move forward with that fight.
Does Tank come into play with this? Because obviously he's got the WBA regular. I think he dropped his WBA regular at 140 and he's still got it at 135. So does he come into play as a potential mandatory to be called?
Possibly. Not at the moment. I don't think. It's certainly not been called, but I can't see him dropping the belt either. But they could still order that fight. They can do whatever they want. But ultimately, we can make Haney against Kambosos as long as we move at decent pace.
Did you see any of Tank's performance?
Yeah, I watched it. I was in the airport. Someone had it on. We're flying back. You were on our flight, weren't you? Isaac Cruz did what we knew he was capable of, which is to be tough. I don't think it was a scintillating performance, but Tank's a very good fighter. I just don't know what the route is for him. You know, they keep talking about Lomachenko and, you know, Haney and all this, and they're just going to fight Rolly Romero. It's just what they do. So, but, you know, he's a very good fighter.
Jake Paul and Tommy Fury will not happen. We landed to that news after our flight from Vegas. Obviously, you've got then Logan and Jake coming out. And that's like their YouTube persona. And as soon as they see something like that, they jump on it. Are you in agreement with them that Tommy is scared to fight Jake Paul? And that is the reason why he's pulled up?
I doubt it. I mean, you know. But obviously, when everybody said, and Tyson Fury said, he's fighting with one arm, he only needs this. That's just beautiful prey and, you know, bait for the Pauls to sort of do what they do, which is really annoy people and be quite cringe, but they're intelligent people. They know what they're doing. And you have to give them respect of how quickly they move to log in the Woodley rematch. I mean, I know it's not as big a fight, but still decent enough. And, you know, I think they'll just forget about Tommy Fury now. I think they'll just freeze him out because it was probably quite a dangerous fight for them. And now they look like Tommy Fury shit himself. But I don't think he has. I think he's probably genuinely injured or ill or whatever it is. And he's missed a big payday. But, you know, it's boxing.
Obviously, I'm asking you as someone who would have to give an outside opinion, but let's say you promoted Tommy Fury and he was frozen out of a potential Jake Paul fight in the new year. It would be quite hard for him to go back to fighting the level of the guys that he's fought on the British scene, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it was really the perfect fight for Tommy Fury. And like you say, he's just going to be going back to fighting low-level opposition. But who knows? Maybe he'll get another fight of another YouTuber or a celebrity. It's a funny world we live in.
Thanks for listening to the IFL TV podcast, sponsored by William Hill, in association with Lonsdale MTK Global.